My name is Ryan Ware, and this is Bumjin Im. We are the security leads for Tizen, and we came here to give you a overview about what we are trying to do with Tizen Security to help make sure that we are able to use Tizen to build platforms in a secure manner and to help ensure we're protecting end users' privacy and doing all the right things that the user community would expect of us. Some of you may know me from working on MeeGo. Bumjin is having fun or learning the ways of open source and public talks like this. But hopefully you guys will all enjoy this. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask them as we're going along. And with that, I will let Bumjin start with the material. Thanks.
Thank you, Ryan. Okay, I'm starting with the Tizen Security Overview. And this presentation consists of this content. So I'll mention about security model of Tizen. And Ryan will cover about access control and application security and future plans. So first, the Tizen Security model. Oh, the picture is wrong. Anyway, sorry. Actually, the
sorry.
The picture is clipped.
My bad.
But it's okay. The bottom, the blue clipped picture is actually the platform resource. That there are some threat model. This threat model is based on the our customers' requirement, usually operators, and our previous experience, and also some benchmarking of other platforms. So basically, what we are think of is in here is that it's similar to this normal, you know, you get normal OS, normal modern OS that has some threat from the internet by some attacker or hacker, but the different thing from that is that actually we are think of user maybe malicious either because. The in business owner of this platform model is that it's a little bit different from desktop OS. So we have to think about of the consistency of business as maybe mobile platform. So actually, the in this picture, left and right is actually identical. So you can fold it in vertically, and it's the same. So but the difference between maybe malicious user and the hacker is that where is the bad guy sitting? So for example, the user will sit in front of the device and do whatever thing locally, but the attacker will be sitting the other side of the internet and do some bad thing via internet. So usually the threat will have two different types. So one is that by distributing malicious application, or the other one is exploiting the platform directly. So just look at the picture and, you know, just for reference. Based on the threat model, we have four security principles. So the one is that no application is running under root privilege, meaning that we are not allowing root for the application. Currently, in Tizen 1.0 release, many of the system daemons is running under root privilege, but it'll be minimized in next release. And also, no application can interpret each other, meaning that we sandbox for sandboxing the older applications. So, but also it is possible to get some application family that multiple application can be in the same sandbox. And some important system resources are protected by access control mechanism. Actually, Imad in today morning, Imad said that SMAC. Actually, the SMAC is simplified mandatory access control in kernel. So we are using that mechanism to enforce the access control for important system resources. So for example, in kernel space object, like some files, DBs, or network interfaces, or IPCs and signals. We are enforcing access control there. And also user space object, like make a phone call or send an SMS, receive an email or something like that. And all applications should have least privilege. You know, the least privilege is very hard objective, but we are planning to do that. And also the meaning that in each application will have different set of privilege. So no other application will have same privilege by definition of the platform. So based on the principle, we made this security model. Actually, there are so many texts, but you can read easily, I think. So in non-root applications, actually all the applications are running under same non-root user ID, just like desktop Linux does. And most of the middle daemons will run as non-root user either in next release. And application sandboxing, all the applications are sandboxed by SMAC. So each application has its own SMAC label. I think Ryan will tell you later on in this session. And each application is unable to send anything, you know, interrupt any other by SMAC. For example, it cannot send IPC or cannot send any signal, cannot read and write other applications file unless it has SMAC rules. And also we have resource access control by SMAC. So important system objects are SMAC labeled. For example, like DB files or network interface, those things will have SMAC labels. So basically, if an application doesn't have proper SMAC rule, the application cannot be able to access those system resources. So also, we have make use of SMAC, user space SMAC library, to enforce system daemon level access control, user space access control, also by SMAC. And also, the old files, not actually all, but by default, all files will be owned by root, meaning that application cannot change any files in the platform unless the files is in home directory and has SMAC rules. And regarding the least privilege, the all application will have its proper manifest file which describes the permissions and labels. So permissions will be assigned based on the manifest file during installation, and the application's label will be assigned during launching. So here is just one page of SLP access control model. Before that, please think of the Linux desktop access control model. So in Linux desktop, you have to log in first. Then the login shell or your desktop environment will set UID to the user. And those desktop environment will have the proper group IDs to get the proper permissions. But in Tizen, we don't have login. So it's a little bit different. So all application will run under predefined non-root user ID, just a user. But it is done by the launcher daemon. It is not login-based. So if you click an application in a home screen, its name is actually AUL, Application Utility Library, calls the launchpad. Actually, launchpad is a daemon, root daemon, to please launch this app. Then the launchpad gets the request and check the SMAC and checks the SMAC label and launch fork a new process, set UID to the non-root and give the SMAC label and launch execute the application. They actually have all the application is currently is this web runtime actually. And unlike desktop Linux does, we don't have SU command, meaning that we don't have set UID process. So basically, when you are using Linux, we have to have SU to, for example, changing time or changing routing table or some other things. But since we don't have those things, so what we did here is that some of the system modules have that feature, and the application should call some APIs that please change the system time to this. Then the daemon does that. So it's a little bit different than the desktop does. And the mandatory access control, powered by SMEG, as I told you earlier. So each application is SMEG labeled and has proper SMEG rules in SMEG rules DB. So as I told you earlier also, the labels and rules is assigned by assigned and maintained by manifest file from each package. And is the labels and rules are assigned on install time. So installer does that. And the sandboxing is application-based sandboxing, as I told you earlier either. Unlike desktop Linux, in desktop, whatever you execute or whatever you do something on your runtime environment, you are having all the process in the same sandbox. But in here, all the application will have different sandbox. So basically, for example, if you let's assume that you have shell, SMEG shell. You if you type PS, all other applications not shown, only your application is shown, for example. So application can read system files only and not be able to read or write any other files in other applications file. That's the basic of the SMEG-based sandboxing.
So you guys, can you hear me? Okay, so are you guys all still awake? I know it's getting late on the last day. So, let's talk a little bit about SMAC. So SMAC is the Simple Mandatory Access Control Kernel. And if any of you, so the creator and upstream maintainer of SMAC is Casey Schaffler. If you're looking to catch Casey and corner him and ask him many, many questions about SMAC, he's sitting in the fifth row all the way at the end. And if he says he doesn't want to talk to you, let me know. He works for me. I'll make him talk to you. So, we did at one point in the past look at other potential alternatives. But we decided we wanted to stay with SMAC. SMAC is very simple. It is an upstream LSM. It allows access control based upon a very simple concept. You take a subject, which is like a process. You take an object, which is like a file. And you give them labels. And if those labels match, you get to have the permissions that are associated with them. So read, write, execute. So this is all on top of the standard discretionary access controls that are in Linux. Now, I want to talk about this bullet here for a second, because a lot of people come to me and they go, well, why aren't you using SE Linux? SE Linux has been around forever. It's been used by the NSA, created by the NSA. It's the whole reason why there is an LSM interface in the upstream kernel. The problem I have with it, and I've actually talked with the SE Linux guys about this, is the reference policy for SE Linux is more than 900,000 lines of code. And to be honest, I say more than 900,000 lines. I could actually really say more than a million, but every time I say more than a million, it's people don't believe me. So more than 900,000 lines of code. And I have a hard time believing that anybody can actually tell me what those 900,000 lines of code holistically do. What does it do? Sure, you can find cases in there of specific access controls taking place, but what does the thing holistically do? And I don't think anybody really actually has a good answer for that. Because of that, I think with SMAC, by labeling the files in the system in an appropriate manner, for example, labeling the contacts database, contacts, you can actually create a fairly simple rule set of maybe 50 to 100 rules that allow you to give very good access controls to help protect the end user and the privacy of the system. So there are actually some new features in SMAC that we have been able to implement. And actually, I say we, but really the we means Casey. So to start with, we have long label support. One of the complaints that I heard about SMAC for a long time was the fact that SMAC labels can only be 23 characters. And I was like, well, how many options do you really need? Unfortunately, it seems that people want to have SMAC labels nowadays that conform with the Java naming convention of com.companyName.domain.subdomain. So we've made it so that SMAC labels can actually be 255 characters now. If 255 characters isn't enough, well, sorry. I asked Casey how hard it would be to actually upstream labels of 2 megs in size, and he laughed for a little while. Recursive transmute is a new mechanism to be able to do isolation of temporary data for applications in the temp file system, so that you have hierarchies of directories that are owned by specific applications for their temp data. Also, there's SMACFS access. So one of the nice things that we have implemented is, so if you're just a general application and you're running on the system, I don't know what these labels will actually do if I try to access something with this label and I'm running at this label. We have found a way to, with the SMAC file system, to be able to create a way to actually check to see whether or not any particular access would actually be allowed or not. So if I'm running as floor, would I be able to read contacts or something like that? And we've actually extended that to other portions of the software stack. So specifically, great, we've had SMAC in the system, we've had SMAC generically available, but there are some services and items on the platform that will actually be able to utilize SMAC very well. So one of the things that we have enabled is SMAC enablement of X-Access Control extensions. So if you're not familiar with XACE, XACE is an access control framework for XORG. And with this, we've actually made it so that X applications, instead of everybody talking to X all the time and having access to everybody else talking to X, we actually have isolation we're able to put in place now. From a security perspective, I've always looked at DBoss and gone, oh my God, I don't even want to look there. DBoss, from a security perspective, is a mess. We've always just said, DBoss is what it is. Here, it's a bus. Put data over there, everybody can see it. If you want to go pick it up, great. If not, just let it fly by. Well, that's very, very bad for being able to put in any kind of data that needs to be protected. So one of the things that we have done is by utilizing the SMACFS access that we've added, DBoss is now able to determine whether or not particular applications can have access to specific kinds of data. So that contacts can be transmitted over DBoss, but yet applications that don't have a contacts label associated with them are not able to actually access the contacts information. UDEV, one of the things that we did with UDEV is UDEV has a lot of nice things about it, but it had absolutely no idea what SMAC labels were. So we have put in patches for UDEV that allow us to ensure that we can say, okay, device node dev camera actually comes up with a camera label. So instead of having to, after the fact, add labels to each one of these device nodes, they actually come and are labeled by UDEV itself. And finally, RPM, one of the things that we need to have when we're doing SMAC is, we have to have SMAC labels on everything in the file system. How does that happen? Well, the one place where we can make sure that always happens is when we have RPM enabled to understand SMAC labels. So we have a plugin to RPM that allows manifests to be added to each package. And when the manifest is read by RPM, it actually sets all the labels in the file system so that we're able to ensure everything is labeled correctly on the system. This is you.
Yeah. Thanks. In user space, we have a little bit different than I and Ryan said before. So what is the user space object? So system resources consist of client server. That is kind of user space object. We are actually, everybody defined like that. So for example, like telephony. So in Tizen, the telephony object is actually done by telephony server, which is a daemon process. And the application just send the IPC to the daemon, and the real modem device is accessed by only by the telephony server. So in kernel level, the kernel cannot know what is going on. Just in kernel space, just it's normal. Application send IPC to the telephony server. Telephony server sends read and write in modem or something. So it's just normal. But in user space point of view, you can make a phone call. And you can, for example, change pin lock number or something. So it is not able to do in the kernel space. So we added a little bit more about the user space access control. So about mechanism, we have two different mechanisms in here. So one is the direct IPC, and the other one is indirect IPC. So in direct IPC, it is very easy because the server can identify peers SMAC label because of powered by this SOAR PSEC feature, which is in mainstream kernel from 3.2, I believe. And because of this feature, the server, for example, telephony server in here, can identify application SMAC labels the other end of the socket. And okay, these guys have this label. Okay, this guy is trying to make a phone call. Do we have those rule? And if we have the rule, it grant the access. If not, it denies the access. But the problem is indirect IPC. Just like Ryan said before, one of the good examples is Dbus. So in Dbus point of view, Dbus daemon, the Dbus process, is always sitting in the middle of all the channel of the IPC. So for example, again, telephony server, it's not a good example, but just make an example. So let's assume that telephony server uses Dbus for its IPC. And just let assume again that it only has one interface, for example. Then everything in the Dbus side is dropped down to one interface. So Dbus cannot know what's going on. So telephony server should know what is going on right now. But it's not possible because in telephony server's point of view, the end peer of this IPC connection is always Dbus daemon, not a real application in the other side of the Dbus daemon. So we had introduced a trusted daemon named security-server. You can check the source code there, which identifies the client and check the rule of the SMAC. So let me explain better on this picture. Okay, in the right picture, this is the direct IPC case, so maybe I can skip the explanation. But in left picture, it is very complicated, but to be honest, I think it is the best way to identify the client and server there. So in application process, is trying to, for example, make a phone call. And the service daemon is waiting for the request of the application process. But if there is intermediate process, for example, Dbus daemon in here, I don't know, and the application process doesn't send the request directly to the server. Before the application send the request to the server, it requests cookie value to the security server. The IPC connection between application and security server is Unix domain socket, which is able to get the peer's identity, peer's SMAC label. So when the application process requests the cookie, security server gets the other end's SMAC label and make a quite long random cookie. Currently it's like 20 bytes, but you know, it can configurable. And store the SMAC label and cookie value in the local memory and send back the random cookie to the application process. Then application process get the cookie and sends the request, for example, make a phone call to here with the cookie to the server, the service daemon. And the service daemon receive the request and just get the cookie and ask to the security server that I have been asked by this guy, I don't know who he is it allowed to make a phone call? Then the security server gets the request and look up the memory, DB, and if there is a SMAC label and rules, then it just returns back to the result of the access control. This is the indirect case.
So one of the things that I wanted to bring up here is, so I mentioned manifests earlier. Manifests are essentially files added into your RPM. The file can be really, actually usually, almost always is very simple. This is actually a fairly complex version here. There is a line that you have to put into your spec file. And these manifests, in this particular case, it talks about creating a new domain for that package called camera. The policy for that is that it's shared across various packages in the system. I'm not going to go into all of this, but this will be an example in the slide set. And actually, we're going to be putting up the full documentation on the Tizen Wiki here. Actually, I will probably be putting that up tomorrow. Manifests are actually, this is probably the most complicated version that I've seen. Generally, most of the manifests in any package in the system, especially for system packages, it's five lines long. It's define domain name equals floor, and then closing of the XML. It's all pretty much fairly simple. The other thing that I wanted to talk about here is our software distribution, how we're doing that securely. One of the problems with RPM-based systems is that, in general, so for example, you have all of your software sources from Tizen.org, but you've also added this app store. The last thing that you want to have happen is that app store to go, oh, hey, I have a newer version of glibc. Let's go ahead and install it. Generally, you want to have the versions of highly critical packages not be determined by some random app store or some random software repository that you've configured into your Tizen system. So one of the things that we have here is that every software source can have a trust level associated with it. And what that allows is that updates for software that are installed in the system can only come from either the same source or a source that has greater trust. That way, an app store is not able to install something that you don't want them to. The way that this happens is going to be configurable by any OEM utilizing Tizen, as with many of the security features that they ship on their platforms. One of the nice things about this too is you can remotely update from one of the highest trust level repositories what the actual trust levels of these different repositories are. Future plans. Now, as some of you might understand, there have been some flux around Tizen and what we're doing. These are all areas that we're looking at incorporating into versions of Tizen post 1.0. So One of the things that we would like to is to make it simple for developers to incorporate manifests into their packages. So we want to have a way of having the SDK auto-generate those for developers. We want to extend SMAC labels and rules to give some finer grained access to the initial set of rules that we're going to put in place for 1.0. PKI-based package signing. So one of the criticisms we've had of RPM package signing is that it is based upon GPG, and GPG does not allow a key hierarchy. So we would like to figure out a way of fixing this so that we can use X509 and actually create a real key hierarchy. We're going to use IMA and EVM for online and offline file system integrity. We're going to look at using Linux container-like features. You know, a lot of people talk about Linux containers, and Linux containers is great, but LXC is just a user space application that configures kernel options around namespaces. And what we really want is we want to use those kernel namespaces to provide better isolation than we can even with just SMAC. Whether or not we use LXC or we use systemd to put those in places, that's great. We're going to look at using C groups to make sure it becomes very difficult to denial of service the platform. We're going to be looking at file system snapshots to potentially help not only have a factory reset that's just readily there for someone to use, but even to be able to give disposable application environments to go run in so that you tell an application, here, go use the snapshot to run in. If that application actually becomes malicious for some reason or another, you can actually take that whole entire file system that it's running in, throw it away, give it a brand new snapshot. You don't care. The last thing, and I don't really mean to put this last, is HTML5 security. We are looking at many, many different ways to help ensure that the HTML5 web runtime aspects of Tizen are secure and allow us to be able to deliver a secure platform. As part of that, I'm actually in a W3C web application security working group. Samsung is bringing many different ideas on board to help ensure that the web runtime is secure on this platform. Whoops. That said, you know, it's me, and yes, I have a team of folks, and Bumjin, and he has a team of folks, but we cannot have our eyes everywhere. If you have any questions or concerns about the security of Tizen, please do not hesitate to contact us. Security at Tizen.org will get both Bumjin and myself. We also have both of our email addresses up here. If you want to help, there will be opportunities to participate in doing Tizen security from the community at some point in the not-too-distant future. So, with that, do you guys have any questions? Can you go to the mic, please? I know I risk getting fewer questions by making people actually get up, but...
Does this work? Yes. With a very basic question, pardon me if I missed this earlier, with the PKI, suppose I want to trust an entity, suppose by adding a certificate to my list of certificates that I trust, mm-hmm. can I do any access control on that to say I want to trust this certificate with these particular software packages rather than trust them with all software packages? Is that considered? Moxie Marlin Spike is a person who, you know, made that topic part of the world's attention. You know, the effects without that are disastrous, so, you know.
So I actually think that's a very interesting usage model. I don't think that we've looked at it in any kind of depth. I mean, to start with, I'd actually like to get the PKI hierarchy in there. Being able to associate specific portions of that hierarchy with specific sources in software packages, I think, is something interesting for us to look at.
The reason I ask is because this is just a use case, if I may elaborate. I suppose I work for company A, but I also work for company B. I don't want company A to be able to get malicious software, to, you know, obviously. And then another question I had was, there are a lot of, clearly you guys care about security.
No, we don't.
No. Yeah, but Android doesn't seem to, you know, take security as seriously as you guys. Android is kind of just this thing that, you know, Google does invest more in the Google apps than Android itself. Android is just this thing to get them running. I notice in the Android market, we're seeing is, you know, digital restrictions management. You can't choose which Linux kernel you run on some devices. Like the Motorola Droid 4 has got this great keyboard. If I want to be on Verizon and I want a physical keyboard, I have to buy this phone that is going to choose for me which Linux kernel I run. So if these secondary vendors like Verizon can choose for me which kernel I run, they can use this against me, and they can use this against, you know, my boss. I want to say to him, hey, use this platform, it's secure, whichever. I'm not sure who in the Tizen Association I would ask, but what does Tizen do to mitigate the damage that digital restrictions management that circumvent the GPL version 2? What do you do? How do you answer that? Like,
so,
please pardon me if that's out of scope. But.
No, that's fine. So the way I would answer that is there are OEMs that will do what they want with the products that they ship, even with Tizen in them. So if they really want to try to ensure that there is only a specific kernel that you can go use and you can't replace it, that is what they want to do, and that's what they'll do. If you would like to make sure you only give your money to OEMs that ship products that allow you to replace your kernel, I'm sure there will be Tizen folks that do that as well.
I see. On Android, that choice has been very limited in availability.
I understand that. I personally have a belief that the platform will end up being more secure if you let end users who understand what they're doing do what they want with the platform. I'm just a security guy, so we'll see what happens. But I understand your concerns and appreciate them.
Cool, I appreciate your answers.
So. Sure.
Quick question. I want to make sure I understand.
I'm not answering your questions. Yeah, see you all the
time. I could just answer you tomorrow in the office. But no, I thought it's a good question. I understand that one of the biggest problems that Android's had is privilege escalation in terms of things that are generally thought of as, oh, it's like contacts or whatever. It's like an app that didn't have permission to do that, but now it can. So a lot of what you guys have focused on is more sort of platform-level component security. My concern, or maybe I missed something, is I want to understand what are you doing and how do you protect applications who might exploit a flaw in the browser, because there will be one, you have to expect it, and exploit that and escalate, not necessarily their process, you know, like from a user to root, but getting access to contents when they weren't, because now they're able to masquerade as a different application than the one that they started out as, because they exploited a flaw in the browser and now they can.
There will be no flaws, we'll code perfectly.
Yeah, browsers are perfect, there's never bugs, so. Just want to understand your thoughts on how to protect against that.
So, I understand that what we're trying to do for Tizen 1.0 is not the end-all and be-all of what we can do or where we should get into the long run. I would like to get basic protections in first and then help ensure that when things do like that do happen, like a malicious application that actually, and actually the one example that I really look for is somebody that creates a contacts application that is valid, that we've all said, yeah, okay, it's in the App Store, well, you can upload it and use it.
Yeah.
But specifically, because the author specifically did it, has a buffer overflow in it for them to go attack and use their malware and get it in that way.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to, in the longer term, be able to figure out how to protect against those kinds of scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, one thing is, you know, I mean, developers like that would include an URL in the manifest, so this is an approved URL, and they'll just keep it and not use it until a flaw is found in the engine, and then now when you click on that innocuous help button, they change the help page to something innocent to something evil, and we still think the app's trusted, right? So it's a tough problem. I was just curious.
It's definitely a tough problem, and actually one of the areas that we're hoping to help with is with places like AppUp and the Tizen store, give them all of the tools that we can and help them so that they can look for those kind of things when they validate apps.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, cool. Thanks.
Sure.
If we want to deploy this Tizen in the short term, not long term. What would the end-to-end kind of a security model of that particular applications? For example, I understand the PKI-based security would be on the horizon, right? So it's not there yet. So how do you get your application to be delivered from a trusted server? If the operator owns a trusted store, for example, how does this being transferred, this one, how this particular application or the developer to the store will be, you know, given? That's kind of a, can you just posture a kind of an end-to-end model of the security?
Do you want to touch on it?
Actually, we are trying our best to make the posture now. So actually, we will make soon, maybe in end of this year or next release, I think. Yeah, that's the answer, actually.
Yes.
My question is like, so who signs the app? Like, is it the distributor or the author? And how the permissions are granted? Is it like user grants the permissions, like labels, or how is it?
So, when it comes to the software stack that comes from Tizen itself, everything is signed by Tizen, and we validate it. And there's only one signature on those things. Things that come from an app store, what I am hoping we finally get in place is a solution that, first of all, makes sure that the app developer has to sign it so that we know that they say, okay, great, it came from them. And the app store itself also has to sign it. And that is kind of a sign from them that, yes, okay, we validated this app. As far as we know, there's no malware in here, and this is a well-behaving app. To do that, we need to have a fuller PKI solution. In the short term, I'm not exactly sure what our solution is going to be, but we will make sure that we make it as secure as we possibly can. We also want to make sure that it's not a complete hassle for the developer either. So.
Also,
another question?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an end user, so I'm going to ask these questions too.
We don't care about end users.
We're all end users. You're an end user, and you're a security guy. You must be, see how, you know.
No, the only way to make it secure is just turn it off.
I completely agree with you. But if I had to sail out onto the internet ocean with a computer, I'd much rather be running
Sure.
plus Linux than Mac OS X or Windows. You probably feel that way too. So suppose I want to, or have to for some reason, want to run a proprietary application. And that proprietary application says it wants permissions to the following five large items. One may be a network interface, one may be my contacts database, whichever. And I want to do everything. For example, let's say I want to use the Instagram application. And I want to use this. I've been socially pressured to use this, and I think, OK, this is convenient. I'm going to do this. But it wants access to my contact list. And I think, well, that's my address book. I don't want to share that with Instagram, unless, and I'm not going to spend my time to audit the application to see which, you know, key, you know, whatever data it's pulling out of there. So for proprietary applications, because they will be on Tizen, proprietary applications will be on Tizen, as an end user, can I go ahead and run that proprietary application, but then deny it those particular permissions and have it still run? Can I just give it a fake contact database and just run it anyway? Because I don't think that proprietary application developers should be able to impose access on me and put me in that between a rock and a hard place, whether I run it at all or I give it access to my everything.
Can I answer this? So, you know, I have an Android phone. I've had a few Android phones. I am a very big fan of the CyanogenMod model, where it allows you to say, okay, I'll let this application have this access, but not this other access. Instead of the way upstream Android does, having, you know, all or nothing, I don't like that. I very much like to be able to have the end user say, yeah, I don't want them to have access to my contacts, but they can have access to the network. I would like to get to a point where we're able to do that in Tizen. I'm not sure when that will be.
Is it likely that we'll see that? I'm also a fan of that particular feature I saw.
I got to figure out how to be able to do that without breaking the apps.
I see.
And while I'm very smart and can do things quick, I don't have that one done.
Well, it's an open source project, so just please express your interest in that in all directions. I'm sure people will.
My interest is expressed.
Awesome. My interest is as well. So.
I'm guessing we're over time, but I'll take one more question. Right. I know this guy.
So, do you guys have any recommendations with respect to enabling kernel-level security?
Yeah, run. Run away now.
So especially with memory protection and things.
So enabling application security?
Kernel-level security.
Kernel-level security. Wow, that's a big topic.
I mean, any recommendations about like these are specific configurations that we can enable in the kernel for Tizen?
So actually, look, I will take this AR. I will take the AR to actually publish what our recommended secure kernel configuration is.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
Thanks.
Yeah, because I'm never going to be able to get to that right now.
All right. Thanks.
So. Okay. Lastly, for your information, the giveaway device that you will get tomorrow will not have those features that, you know, you will have root shell, you will have everything there, even though SMEG is enabled, so you can play around.
And tomorrow I have a talk talking about how to prevent rolling spam factories for IBI systems. So if you want to come to that at 11 o'clock tomorrow, I'd be happy to see you.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great time tonight.